And you're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. Good morning. I'm Jonathan Reeves. Joining me right now on the phone lines, we're talking to U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. And Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you as always.
Yes, sir. You bet.
One of the things I was want to start off with and ask you about, recently we know that you toured some of the Black River flooding that occurred in Pocahontas. And as you may know, over the past 11 years, Pocahontas has seen three major flooding events, with the course of this year being the third. Each one of those events could have easily been described as 100-year floods. And, you know, there are some local officials, including State Representative Republican Linda Collins-Smith, who are saying that something needs to be done to prevent this from happening again, and they're really wondering whether levees are enough to be able to prevent that. So I was wanting to see what you thought about. What do you think should be done to address the issue as we think that this might be a new norm with more flooding?
Well, it feels like it because it's been, you know, it seems like Black River and Pocahontas area has been inordinately affected in the last few years with what we kind of refer to as a 100-year flood. But I would say that I think levees do work, and when they're managed properly and maintained and constructed properly. And I'll give you an example. That's the St. Francis levee. You know, they have similar dynamics there. With dealing with floods and things of that nature. And it's worked pretty well for them since 1927. The biggest test, obviously, for that system was 2011, and it held. And so I think that if you see that effort sort of replicated in the Black River area, I think it's most definitely a manageable situation. But there's an investment associated with that. It's not going to happen for free, and it's not going to be something that, you know, farmers can be responsible for. It's going to require some other resources, and so it won't happen on the cheap because it's a large project. But I do believe it can be done and managed and effective in preventing the kind of damage that we see through these flood events.
What role does the federal government play in addressing flooding and preventing future flooding?
Well, you know, that's one of the primary missions of the Corps is flood control, and so they play an integral role. There's no question about that. What they do on an ongoing basis is you know, they do operation and maintenance on levees, and they'll certify a levee, and then they'll play a role in helping to fund the maintenance of a levee. Because once you build a levee, it's just like any other kind of structure. It's subject to, decay over time if it's not maintained, and you know, so there's a dynamic there that requires an ongoing attention to these levees. They're not just put there and then you go, okay, thanks, and then wait for the flood. They monitor those levees. They maintain certification. They maintain the ground itself. So there's an awful lot to it. But I think it can be done. It can be effective. But we've just got to think we need to coordinate a little more comprehensively and collaboratively, because I don't see that happening to the degree that it should have on Black River. I think it's a problem there that if we don't come up with a broader area that's a broader base of support, then it's going to be a difficult challenge going forward.
So how do you put a collaboration together, and what would an ideal collaboration look like?
Well, what you need to do is bring more affected areas in. So if you have right now there is a statutory authority for a levee district, but it's really not big enough. So what it needs to be is extended, and that can be done probably through state legislation. And why I say you need to bring that in, it affects a big area. And so the bigger the area, the more people affected, the more likely you are to have a base for funding and the idea that we're going to support this because it affects more people. And so the Black River, and of course, you know, Pocahontas being the confluence of several rivers, you know, that's got an effect on folks there. But think about downstream, how it affects folks downstream as well. So I would think that you need to bring more counties in, make that levee district bigger, protecting a broader area, and I think you would receive more support.
Governor Hutchinson, of course, declared this area as a state disaster area. Any updates on when, you know, how homeowners and businesses in the area might be able to start seeing some sort of assistance possibly?
Well, not sure exactly when they're actually going to see some impact on themselves financially. What we're trying to do is marshal all the resources that we have at our disposal, certainly from the federal level, but then just trying to get out and ask people to support relief efforts. We're going to be in Pocahontas on June 17th for a fundraising effort there, just to try and put some money in there, just, you know, tap into the generosity of people around Northeast Arkansas who are unbelievably generous. And when we have these types of things pop up, that people pour out whatever resources they can to help their neighbors. And so we're going to try and support that effort. Certainly FEMA is going to play a role here. USDA is going to play a role. SBA will play a role. So there's a lot of different federal resources that we're going to try and utilize and bring to bear to try to provide some relief for folks affected in that flood area. And I would also add, it's certainly, you know, when the Ag Secretary asked me who's the hardest hit, where should I go, I immediately thought of Pocahontas. At that point in time, I think that was probably ground zero for the flooding. But as we spent some time in the air, he and I spent about 3 hours in a helicopter together, close to that. We saw downstream, you know, that water's got to go somewhere, and it's affecting folks all the way down, well south of Clarendon, where we saw just, you know, flooding of, you know, unbelievable proportion all the way down White River and the other smaller rivers that were affected in the basin. So it's certainly hit hard in Black River area, Pocahontas, you know, Lawrence County as well. But everywhere south along those rivers has been impacted dramatically.
And one thing that has been talked about some is that, you know, with a lot of that, there's a lot of cropland that's underwater. And, of course, as you know, yeah, this is a key time for Arkansas agriculture. What do you think the effect on the state's agriculture as a whole will be, and what can affected farmers do?
Well, we're going to lose hundreds of thousands of acres of production. Now, it's some of that can be replanted, and they can make some they can make a little bit of money back to offset their losses. But some of it, there's so much loss involved with, you know, the preparation of the ground that wasn't planted, and then rice, a rice base. You know, there are some restrictions that might impact a producer's ability to replant. And it's not even policy restrictions, it's nature restrictions. Agronomically, it doesn't make sense to plant rice after May 15th. But the rule states practical to replant is June 15th. Well, here we are almost to June 1st, and a lot of that rice ground is still underwater. I'm going to say that we're probably going to be unable to replant rice, and I think that there'll be some claims made on their rice, on their insurance policies that reflect that. And I think the RMA has shown some flexibility there, which we worked very, very hard on. But, you know, following that, I mean, heck, maybe they can put in a late soybean crop and try to make a little bit of lemonade out of the lemons that they were dealt with through this flooding. So it's tough. It's a bad situation. It's going to put some pressure on some farmers. There's no question about it. But we just need to, you know, do all we can to hopefully bring RMA around. And I think we have. We've seen an indication the RMA recognizes that it's not feasible to plant rice after May 15th, even though the rule says June 15th. It actually makes more sense for them to revisit that practical replant provision and adjust it to May 15th. I think they're going to give us a pass on that this year, and that'll provide a little bit of relief to some farmers, as well as the opportunity to replant later in the year. But in some cases, I think that opportunity won't materialize because of the amount of water that we have right now.
Congressman Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. Let's go ahead and switch gears a little bit. As you know, President Trump is making a trip in the Middle East. Kind of your thoughts on that, and what do you hope will come out of that trip to the Middle East?
Well, I think he's making some pretty important statements, you know, first in Saudi Arabia, making sure that they understand his commitment to the ongoing war on Islamic extremism and what our posture is in that and why it's necessary for them to help us in that regard. I think it's important that he went to Saudi Arabia to express that. I think they get the message. It'll, you know, hopefully we'll see going forward a different dynamic in that relationship with Saudi Arabia that's more productive and more understanding of the threat that Islamic extremism presents to peace-loving people everywhere in the world. And so I think that he struck the right tone there. He's now in Israel, and I think that's going very well. I've been watching a little bit of that this morning, some of the coverage on that. And he appears to be really making the right statements and striking the right tone with these international allies.
Going to the Russia investigation, as you know, former FBI Director Robert Mueller was appointed as a special counsel to look at any possible connections between Russia and the Trump administration. Do you think that was a good move? Do you like that pick of Robert Mueller as a special counselor?
You know, as a special counselor, I wouldn't question his integrity or his ability. What I question is whether we really need the special counselor, given the fact that we have two permanent select committees that are actively engaged in this ongoing Russia investigation. And why this matters is because you change the whole priority of the investigation when what we're doing is a counterterrorism investigation. What they've done is taken up a criminal investigation where it may not be warranted. And when you do that, the criminal investigation takes priority or primacy over anything that's going on in the House and the Senate. So much so that I have read some reports that Mr. Mueller might be considering asking the House Intelligence Committee, on which I sit, to stand down. I don't know that those reports are true. I've heard some indications to that effect. And again, that kind of indicates there's a difference here in a counterterrorism investigation versus a criminal investigation. And our stance is and was and is that we're going to follow the facts and present those as necessary. And at that point, we can make a determination whether a criminal investigation needs to be undertaken. And I think it was premature. We didn't have the complete findings. We still, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 32 witnesses to depose. Now those witnesses are going to be very difficult to depose because of now we've got a criminal investigation. They're likely to lawyer up and not want to talk to us. And since the criminal investigation would take priority, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to do our work in regard to the Russia investigation.
In regards to James Comey, do you think that President Trump did the right thing in firing James Comey?
It's hard to say, and I'm not going to second-guess the president, nor am I going to celebrate it or endorse it or take any kind of shot at it. It's hard for me to say with the position that I'm in. I don't run the White House. That's his decision, and he has every right and every authority to do that. I think it's something that I'm really not at liberty to comment on the extent of what I know regarding that. But if the president felt that it was necessary for him to terminate Comey, then you know that he's within his rights to do that, and it's not my position to second guess it. I do find it a little bit disingenuous for all of these Washington Democrats who have lined up against Comey since July of 2016, calling for his termination, and then when they finally get it, now all of a sudden he's a folk hero to the left. And I'm trying to figure out how they square that position when all along they've been asking for his termination.
Do you think that with the that recent article that suggested Trump may have asked Comey to scuttle an investigation of Michael Flynn? Do you think, I know there's been some talk of impeachment in that, or some people have been calling for it. Do you think that there was an impeachable offense or maybe a possible obstruction of justice anywhere in that?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think they've folks on the left who have sought to undermine the president, were talking about impeachment, as far back as the Republican National Convention. And it's just a drumbeat that they feel like if they say it often enough, loud enough, and long enough that eventually the American people will go, yeah, let's impeach the president. I think that's really off base at this point in time. I don't see any need to be talking about impeachment. I think what we need to do is to allow these investigations to play out. Whether or not the special counsel was the right choice or not, that choice was made. And so we're going to allow that to go forward and then let the facts speak for themselves.
And thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you as we've run out of time. Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU, and we appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And, of course, you can hear that on our podcast as we have we talked to our congressional delegation. And, of course, you can hear those back on our podcast. We put those up on the website as well at KASU.org. We can subscribe for those as well. It's 8:33. I'm Jonathan Reeves. We'll go back to Morning Edition here on KASU. Good morning.